Nowhere do we enjoy new opportunities more than with Alaska's Arctic resources.
Senator Mark Begich focuses on the Arctic during his address to the legislature. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Monday, March 5th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, Alaska Republicans prepare to make their presidential pick.
There's definitely an independent streak in Alaskan mentality. You know, we think of ourselves not just geographically separate, but, it definitely has its own vibe.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by ConocoPhillips. The easy oil is gone, and getting to the remaining oil will be a challenge that will require the state and the industry to work together. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. And by Doyon Limited, Interior Alaska's regional native corporation, providing oil field services, government contracting, and natural resource development in Alaska and across the nation. Information at doyon.com.
U.S. Senator Mark Begich said today that Alaska's future is in helping develop the resources and increasing the United States' presence in the Arctic. Begich made his observations at his annual address to a joint session of the House and Senate at the Capitol. He said the state has the resources, the people, the ingenuity, and the location to make things happen.
What we have is an enormous potential for us as a state. The question is, are we going to grab it and are we going to move it forward? And there are morsels of opportunity sitting on our doorstep. It's just the question, are we going to think in those days when Alaska had nothing and we thought big, is that our moment today? I believe it is. When I look at the Arctic and see what the potential is, it's beyond what anyone can imagine what's out there. And there's no better place but to take advantage of that than right here in Alaska.
He says the federal government is beginning to recognize its part in developing the Arctic, and although the state faces its share in federal budget cuts, it still is the highest recipient of federal investment per person of any state. He said a recent report showed that for construction, road and port maintenance and defense alone, Alaska's income jumped $4 billion in the past 3 years. He pointed to challenges such as the risk of military consolidations and cuts in other federal programs, while recognizing what he called limitless opportunities.
Nowhere do we enjoy new opportunities more than with Alaska's Arctic resources. Oil and gas, minerals, fisheries, tourism, transportation, the list goes on and on. We can best seize these opportunities by working together to invest in our facilities, in our education, in our workforce.
Begich called for a combination of state, federal, and private resources to develop the Arctic economy from Alaska rather than cede the leadership position to Russia, China, or Canada. He warned our competitors are not waiting for us.
These countries are investing right now in deep water ports, ships, resources, mapping, and more. China, which isn't, well, they may think they're an Arctic nation, but they're not. But they are busy and acting like one. They are seeking participation in the Arctic Council and is building new vessels to supplement the Ice Dragon, their current icebreaker. Meanwhile, the United States still has not ratified the Law of the Sea, which provides us international framework to exercise our rights in the Arctic.
On another federal matter, the senator said the state needs to request a waiver from the No Child Left Behind Act that subjects Alaska students to federal standards. He said most states have taken advantage of the opportunity to separate themselves from the federal government's micromanagement of local school districts, and he encouraged the state to withdraw from the program, too. Republican presidential primary hopeful Ron Paul made a last-minute campaign trip to Alaska over the weekend. Paul spoke to packed houses at town hall meetings in Anchorage and Fairbanks to rally voters before Super Tuesday. KSKA's Daisha Eaton has this report from Anchorage.
It was standing room only at the Dena'ina Convention Center in Anchorage Sunday night, where a diverse crowd turned out to hear Ron Paul's campaign pitch.
People from Alaska I have known have always been independent-minded. They'd just as soon the Feds stay out of their lives and stay out of their wallets.
Paul made his last-minute sweep through Alaska Sunday, rallying an estimated 1,100 people in Fairbanks and 1,500 in Anchorage. He focused his Anchorage talk on getting back to the basics of the Constitution and making government smaller.
The more they spend, the lower the interest rates go. you know, they just print the money. And it's a fallacy. It's a figment of their imagination that they think this is the answer. And the worst part of it all is it enhances big government.
437 delegates are up for grabs in 10 states, including 24 in Alaska. Most states hold primaries or caucuses, but in Alaska, there will be a presidential preference poll and district conventions. Paul's message seemed to resonate with the Anchorage audience.
Ilona Farr, Anchorage, Alaska. I thought it was really good. I'm a physician. I'm extremely concerned about Obamacare, and I'm glad that there's a fellow physician running. He stands for liberty. He stands for freedom, and I was really glad that he was one of the only candidates that took the opportunity to come up here and actually hear from the people of Alaska.
My name is Josh Freifogel, and I'm from Wasilla. Well, as an Alaskan, there's definitely an independent streak in Alaskan mentality. You know, we think of ourselves not just geographically separate, but, you know, it definitely has its own vibe. So I think just that alone, there's a lot of support for Ron Paul because of that streak, you know.
Mitt Romney sent his son to campaign for him in Anchorage and Fairbanks in February, but no other candidates have campaigned in person in Alaska. Since the state does not hold a primary, it's not usually considered a priority state for candidates, but this year the race is close, and that means candidates are paying more attention than usual to the last frontier. Randy Riedrick is the chair of the Republican Party in Alaska. He says anything could happen in the final hours before the poll.
One never knows, for example, how many pieces of mail will appear, how many phone calls will be made. Many of those phone calls will be made in the last 36 hours.
There's a history of underdog candidates picking up votes in Alaska during caucus time by campaigning in person. Republicans went for Pat Buchanan in 1996 after he visited the state, and Steve Forbes was just a few votes behind George W. Bush in 2000 after he made multiple trips. Paul made it clear at his town hall meeting that he was counting on Alaskans to get out the vote on Tuesday.
We have a tremendous opportunity on Tuesday to make a difference. I hope you will join and make sure that you will be there on Tuesday.
The presidential preference poll will take place across Alaska March 6th from 4 to 8 p.m. You have to be a registered Republican to vote. Some conventions to select delegates will begin directly after polling. The poll will bind delegates to vote for whoever Alaskans choose. In Anchorage, I'm Daisha Eaton.
There won't be an Atka mackerel or Pacific cod fishery in the Western Aleutians until at least 2015. U.S. District Court Judge Timothy Burgess ruled today that the National Marine Fisheries Service would have 23 months to assess the impact of its stellar sea lion protection measures in the region. The agency shut down the Atka mackerel and Pacific cod fisheries in 2011 after determining that they were adversely affecting the endangered western stock of stellar sea lions. Fisheries group and the state of Alaska sued NIMS over the closures. In a January ruling, Judge Burgess upheld the restrictions, but ordered the agency to prepare an environmental impact statement, noting that their initial assessment had not given the public sufficient opportunities to participate. Today's ruling gives NIMS almost 2 years to prepare a more comprehensive statement, and 9 months after that to decide whether any changes to the current rule are warranted. The plaintiffs had argued for a much shorter timeline that would have potentially allowed for reopening the fisheries in 2014. The closures are estimated to cost the industry more than $80 million per year. Under today's ruling, the earliest potential reopening is January 2015. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, shaking out the Iditarod standings in the early part of the race.
And it's hard to get away from anybody this early in the game. You always turn around and there's somebody behind you.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. 8 hours after you quit smoking, your blood oxygen level returns to normal. In 3 months, your lung function improves up to 30%. And 10 years after you quit, your risk of dying from lung cancer is about half that of a smoker. But right now, you're one cigarette closer to cancer. Every cigarette makes you sick, so quit smoking today. Information at 1-800-QUIT-NOW or AlaskaQuitLine.com. This message sponsored by Alaska's Tobacco Quitline.
Hugh Neff is leading the Iditarod. The winner of this year's Yukon Quest left Rainy Pass at 2:58 this afternoon. Ray Reddington Jr. left the checkpoint at 3:09, followed closely by Aaron Burmeister and Lance Mackey. Farther back in the race, Anna Barrington and her twin sister Christy set up camp together at the Finger Lake checkpoint this morning, just as a snowstorm rolled in. The snow and fog had already socked in Rainy Pass. Anna Barrington is running her first race, and she says, so far, so good. But it's not quite the wilderness experience that she expected.
And it's hard to get away from anybody this early in the game. You always turn around and there's somebody behind you.
Her team is already down one dog.
I had to drop one of my youngest dogs in Squintna. We camped like 10 miles outside of Squintna, and just as I stopped at the camping spot, something didn't seem right with his shoulder, so I rubbed him down with a liniment, and I put a shoulder coat on him, kind of a therapeutic thing. Tell Peelum, and he looked pretty good leaving the checkpoint, but the last few miles into Squintna, I just didn't like it, and so I just left him. He's a yearling, so he has plenty of time to get an Iditarod into him.
Her twin sister, Christy, discovered a new lead dog.
I kind of got a new lead dog up there, Greystone. She's kind of surprised me. I stuck her up there just for ha-has, and she did actually pretty good, so I might keep her up there.
The twins stayed at Finger Lake until about 4 p.m. and will have to go over the infamous Happy River steps before reaching Rainy Pass. Ray Reddington Jr. hauled over the steps this morning and was the first into Rainy Pass. Christy Barrington ran the race twice before and thinks she and her team are ready for the steep, often dangerous challenge.
Oh yeah, a lot of snow is good. It'll, by the time we get to it, it'll be like a deep trough that we'll be in. It's almost like a luge.
Oh.
So it's obviously nicer for the guys going down first because they don't have to be inside that trough. But yeah, it'll be fun.
Mushers who have already been through the Happy River steps have reported good conditions. Lockheed Martin has chosen the Kodiak Launch Complex for West Coast launches of its proposed Athena 3 rocket. Friday's announcement comes as lawmakers in Juneau are debating the merits of funding Alaska Aerospace, which operates the Kodiak Launch facility. KMXT's Jennifer Canfield has more.
In order for the Kodiak Launch Complex to accommodate the Athena 3, Lockheed Martin and Alaska Aerospace are seeking $100 million in financing to expand Kodiak's facility to have medium lift launch capability. Governor Sean Parnell said Friday that he'll submit a capital budget request for $25 million from the legislature toward the cost of expansion. That's in addition to the $8 million in operational expenses they're currently seeking. Last spring, Alaska Aerospace released a report that said the corporation could generate $250 million annually in direct and indirect economic impacts by 2018. Alaska Aerospace Chief Executive Officer Dale Nash says the investment could be a generational win.
We see this as a strong opportunity to see if the medium lift market pans out. And if it does, we will be launching rockets with the capability up to four times of what we do right now.
But the announcement doesn't hold much sway with Kodiak Representative Alan Osterman, who is also a non-voting member of the Alaska Aerospace Board. The partnership wasn't news to Osterman, who during a press conference last week said the board was discussing shutting down or selling off the corporation if a significant contract was not secured this year. The facility made only one launch last year. Osterman says that he won't be more supportive without a definite contract.
The announcement that they made is that Lockheed wants to come to Alaska. Lockheed wants to launch out of there. And the whole issue of whether they've got the actual customers for their payloads and those things are still being worked out.
Lockheed Martin's Athena program manager, Al Simpson, is optimistic about bringing the rocket to Kodiak.
The opportunity is very exciting because when we start working industrial base and looking for supply chain, and one of the things we've been talking about is we will do that in Alaska. That's that economic footprint that I think is very important for the state, and it also works the diversification, into an aerospace and defense kind of sector. So those are all key elements of what we're planning on doing going forward.
If all goes as planned, the Athena 3 could be launching from Kodiak's facility as soon as 2014. In Kodiak, I'm Jennifer Canfield.
The city of Unalaska has agreed to settle a lawsuit with the Environmental Protection Agency over more than 4,000 Clean Water Act violations by the city's wastewater treatment plant. Although the lawsuit and settlement are unique to Unalaska, city officials say wastewater is likely going to be an issue in coming years for other Alaskan communities as well. KUCB's Stephanie Joyce reports.
This is one of those times that David actually beat Goliath.
That was Unalaska Mayor Shirley Marquardt speaking at Tuesday night's city council meeting. The council voted unanimously at the meeting to sign a $340,000 settlement with the U.S. Department of Justice. That's much less than the $150 million fine the EPA had originally sought. The terms of the settlement aren't final until they've been approved by the DOJ, but City Attorney Brooks Chandler says that after all the time the parties have dedicated to hashing out the details, the deal should go forward without a hitch. In addition to the fine, the settlement requires the city construct a new wastewater treatment plant and a storage tank for landfill runoff. The projects, which are expected to cost $18 million, should bring the city up to national water quality standards. Currently, the city's wastewater treatment plant struggles to control discharge of sewage and heavy metals. City Manager Chris Laddick says the way the existing system is set up, runoff from the landfill, which contains lots of heavy metals, flows into the wastewater treatment plant and coats the UV lights that are supposed to kill harmful bacteria in the sewage.
Now you're outside of the parameters of your permit. You got to take the bulbs out, you got to clean them, and those guys have to clean them constantly.
Laddick says the new system will use chemical treatments, including chlorine, to remove the heavy metals and kill the bacteria. Councillor Dave Gregory said at the meeting that he's happy the city will be improving the quality of its wastewater.
Yeah, I think the highlight of this is that we're going to have a wastewater treatment plant that's going to make a significant impact in the water that gets into the bay. And so I think in that regard that this is a positive.
Several other councillors echoed Gregory's comments, but added that the solution will come at a high cost to city residents. Manager Chris Laddick says utilities customers will almost definitely see an increase in their bills, although it's not clear when. Laddick says depending on the final project costs and how much the council decides to subsidize the utility, customers could see an increase of $80 or more on their monthly sewer bills. Although this is likely the end of the current wastewater treatment issue, Laddick adds that the settlement doesn't guarantee anything beyond 2021. He says it's not unreasonable to imagine more stringent wastewater regulations in the future, both for Unalaska and other communities in the state.
On a statewide basis, the policy that was passed by Senator Stevens in 1979 had 78 villages that exempted them from applying for a waiver for secondary treatment. And now I think all bets are off. So some of the communities that are on that list are Bethel and Kotzebue, Dillingham. I think some of the larger ones, when they go to renew, they're going to have to build plants, is my guess.
The new plants he's referring to are secondary wastewater treatment plants, which Laddick says cost many millions of dollars more than the enhanced primary treatment system the city is planning to build. In the meantime, the current settlement should be finalized by the end of May, with the wastewater treatment plant construction going out to bid by December. In Unalaska, I'm Stephanie Joyce.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by the Pebble Partnership, developing a comprehensive mine plan that meets Alaska's regulatory requirements while supporting sustainable fisheries in Southwest Alaska. PebblePartnership.com.
And by
Alyeska Pipeline Service Company, committed to safety, operating the 800-mile Trans-Alaska Pipeline for over 30 years.
The first version of an oil tax reform bill has left its first committee, Senate Resources, and will go next to the Senate Finance Committee. After 19 hearings, getting input from oil companies, consultants, and the Parnell administration, the committee proposed changing the state's current tax structure, making concessions to the oil industry that were less than what the governor proposed last year. Kenai Republican Tom Wagner objected, saying the bill did not consider or meet the Senate majority's own goals.
The Senate Bipartisan Working Group issued a statement saying that we want three things: increased oil production, and these are three things out of this bill.
increased oil production, more jobs for Alaskans, sustainable state revenue over the long term. I don't think this bill does any of the above.
The new plan reduces the progressive tax rate that varies depending on the market price of oil, and it gives a bonus or allowance for taxes on oil from newly developed wells. For those concessions to the oil industry, the Senate plan would increase taxes at the bottom of the price spectrum to give a floor for the state to count on. It also separates or decouples oil and gas taxes, and it sets up a system for oil companies to share information that is already in the public domain. Anchorage Democrat Hollis French said the bill makes major fiscal concessions to the oil industry, and he sees oil company opposition as only negotiating points.
The focus of this bill as it moves forward is going to be about new oil. Every single person in this room is completely united around the idea that we have to have more oil in the pipeline. There's not a single person in this room today who thinks we should not have more new oil in that pipeline. And I think in that idea, we can move forward.
The bill now goes to the Finance Committee, where it will be heard after members return from the mid-session break they are taking to attend energy-related meetings in Washington, D.C. One of the emerging players in the recent renaissance of Cook Inlet oil and gas exploration is the Houston, Texas-based Apache Corporation. One of the leaders at Apache is John Hendricks, an Alaskan who graduated from Homer High School in 1975. Hendricks returned to his hometown last week to make a presentation to the Homer City Council about his company's intentions. KBBI's Aaron Selbig reports.
Well, we're very pleased to welcome John Hendricks, our former wrestling champion. We were worried about John when he was growing up. He seems to have got himself an important job. So let's welcome John Hendricks.
That's the auspicious welcome that John Hendricks received from Homer Mayor Jim Hornaday at Monday night's meeting of the Homer City Council. Hendricks grew up in Homer and last year was named general manager of Alaska operations for the Houston, Texas-based oil company Apache Corporation. Apache has emerged as a major player in Cook Inlet exploration over the last couple of years, having acquired many leases, including 16 from the Alaska Mental Health Land Trust. That deal made Apache the largest single leaseholder in Cook Inlet. Today, the company is a $40 billion a year company that employs more than 4,000 people. Hendricks says a large part of his company's recent growth and success is due to its efforts in Alaska.
Apache wants to be viewed as the most responsible developer and the partner of choice in Alaska. And we believe that we need to engage with the citizens before we develop and work with them and listen to them, because if we cannot do it safely, if we cannot do it with the community and with the best interests of the citizens, we're not going to do it.
So what exactly does Apache want to do in Cook Inlet? Right now, seismic testing, says Hendricks. The company is employing more than 150 people, mostly on the west side of the inlet in the Tyonic area, to conduct testing in an area of about 20 square miles.
And what we want to do is we want to responsibly develop this acreage. And how we do that is knowing the facts. We need to have a map of the subsurface. We are basically writing the book of the subsurface of the Cook Inlet. West side, in the inlet, and the east side.
Hendricks says Apache Corporation is not a company that likes to sit on its assets.
We're not here as a one-shot wonder. We're here as basically to plan, develop, succeed, and stay in Alaska.
City Council members asked questions following Hendricks' presentation, including one about local hire from David Lewis and another from Kevin Hogan about environmental concerns as they relate to Homer's commercial fishing fleet. Mayor Hornaday again welcomed Hendricks and Apache Corporation to Homer, pointing out Homer's top-notch port and harbor facilities, airport, and workforce, but he also offered a word of caution.
We have a number of special interest groups that are very vocal here, writing letters to the editor and that sort of thing, but they do not speak for the city of Homer. And at least in my view, you're most welcome. We hope you use our facilities. We hope you set up offices here. We hope you hire our young people and our old people. We have a lot of very talented people, and we sure need the jobs. So well, you're welcome here, and we hope you come and participate with us.
Hendricks says Apache Corporation hopes to drill two land wells later this year, one on the west side of Cook Inlet and one on the east side. In Homer, I'm Aaron Selbig.
Four Anchorage kids and one Mexican exchange student are traveling to Utah to compete in the ski jumping and Nordic combined junior nationals. The competition started yesterday and runs through Wednesday. The strong Alaska delegation is a sign of renewed interest in the sport. APRN's Heather Arono visited the Hilltop Jumps on a recent weekend and has the story.
There's no chairlift on the northern side of Hilltop Ski Area, so the kids tramp up with their skis held over their heads. The jumps stand at the height of 15, 40, and 60 meters. The junior competitors use the 40-meter jump, launching themselves into the air with nothing but skis and momentum.
Yes! Oh, you took it down the hill!
Program coordinator Karen Compton says ski jumping requires personal willpower.
It's really the only sport I can think of besides perhaps platform diving where you have to have courage as well as athleticism. If you're too afraid to go off the jump, you can't be a ski jumper.
One of the kids traveling to Utah is 12-year-old Ryan Brubaker. This is his second year in the program, and he's more focused on fun than fear.
Well, I don't know. I like big air. I like jumps, so it's it's about the same as alpine skiing.
There are three other Anchorage kids on the AK ski jumping team. 9-year-old Jasper Rigg, 10-year-old Alex Murray, and 13-year-old Jack Konzenstein. The oldest member of the team is 15-year-old Jose Miguel Banda, an exchange student from Puebla, Mexico. Though he had never seen snow before this fall, Banda has put in a lot of practice to excel at the sport.
Well, like, when you are in there, you can feel like you're flying. I don't know, when you're landing, it's pretty cool. You're like, yeah, I made it.
Assistant coach Trevor Taylor learned to jump under the direction of the program's founder, Carl Ide. He says Banda has been very dedicated to learning how to jump.
You know, he's really motivated and he does really well. You would never guess he'd never been on skis before. So it's good, and it's kind of almost comical that he's doing so well considering this is his first year on skis.
The program has grown from just a few kids last winter to around 30 jumpers this year. Karen Compton hopes the increased popularity of the sport will get more people familiar with ski jumping.
It's such a unique sport, and it's such a great opportunity for these kids to live in a city that actually has ski jumps.
In Anchorage, I'm Heather Arono.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org. You can follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Dacia Eaton in Anchorage, Stephanie Joyce in Unalaska, Jennifer Canfield in Kodiak, and Aaron Selbig in Homer. APRN's Dave Donaldson reported from Juneau, Heather Arono from Anchorage, and Ann Hillman from Finger Lake. Our editor and producer is Annie Feit. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Josh Edge is our web producer. And I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by Wells Fargo, providing financial tools and resources for purchasing a home or planning for the future. Wells Fargo Bank, N.A. And by Primera Blue Cross Blue Shield of Alaska, providing quality health plans to companies and individuals in Alaska for over 60 years. More at Primera.com. Primera Blue Cross Blue Shield of Alaska. We know the territory. The State of Alaska Department of Revenue reminds you to file online now for your 2012 PFD. Also, paper applications are located in your community. More information at pfd.alaska.gov. This message sponsored by the State of Alaska. The Alaska Energy Authority announces the 2012 Commercial Energy Audit Program. Owners of eligible commercial buildings throughout Alaska, including nonprofits, may be reimbursed for a qualifying energy audit. Go to akenergyauthority.org to apply online. Applications are due to AEA by Wednesday, March 28th. Energy efficiency is good for business. This message sponsored by the Alaska Energy Authority.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.